You and I back together again on a Columbus Day, Monday, October 11th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcome the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling Executive Director Donna Good to chat with us about the soft rollout for online gambling in Connecticut. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso called in to talk about the continued Columbus Day controversy. And I also had a few thoughts on a state legislator who's compared the actions of Governor Ned Lamont in the COVID-19 pandemic to those of German dictator Adolf Hitler. So we have this controversy now. Republican State Rep Ann Dauphiné is caught in this little bit of a brouhaha here regarding something she said that I have always said should never be done. I don't care whether you're talking about somebody on the left, Joe Biden, some Democrat, somebody on the right, Donald Trump, somebody at the local level, Governor Lamont here. It is stupid. It is stupid. I'm sorry. It is stupid. It makes no sense. Now, if you want to criticize Governor Lamont, have at it. Go ahead. Talk tough. You can go ahead and do that. Please, go ahead. I wish you would. I like when people talk tough about Democrats and Republicans. Keep them on their toes. The Hitler references, stop it. Stop the Hitler references. Stop the Hitler references. First of all, you people making these Hitler references, 99% of you never lived through what Adolf Hitler did to his people, okay? So stop the Monday morning or the Sunday night or whatever quarterbacking here. You were never there, 99% of you. You have no idea what it's like to have lived through Nazi Germany, the vast, 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 vast majority of you, and were able to get out. The same thing with people on the left who are saying, oh, Donald Trump's a fascist. Fascist this, fascist that. They tossed around the word fascist when Trump was in office like it was a half-pound bag of Skittles. My God, stop it. You have no idea. You have less than zero idea what it's like to live under fascism. You have less than zero of an idea what it's like to live under a murderous dictator like Adolf Hitler. Okay? Stop it. And to even effort the notion that Ned Lamont and Adolf Hitler should be mentioned in the same sentence, it's lunacy. It's nuts. You, by doing that, you dilute any sort of a viable argument you may have in the situation. State Rep. Ann Dauphiné making the comment on a CT News Junkie Facebook post sharing an article on the firing of a dozen state employees who refused to get the vaccine or to submit to weekly coronavirus testing. So out of 32,000 state employees, because the governor chose to discipline 12 of them. And by the way, this was disciplined under an agreement that they reached with the state employees unions. So it's not like the governor is just doing this, oh, I think I'll do this or that. No, the unions agreed to this. They agreed to this. Democrats, Jewish groups, and the Connecticut Anti-Defamation League condemned the comment and called for Dauphiné to apologize. Now, in her defense on some aspect of it here, just because you are trying to make a political similarity here with Adolf Hitler, that doesn't mean you're anti-Semitic. So the other side, too, in this, let's take a breath here. Pump the brakes on the anti-Semitism here. Was it a stupid comment? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. For any person, let alone an elected member of the Connecticut General Assembly, to put Adolf Hitler's name in the same sentence or in the same post with Ned Lamont, come on. Come on. And this is the exact kind of thing that whomever is running against you, and I don't know whether Representative Dauphiné has a safe district or not, but this is the exact kind of thing that a Democratic candidate can put right back in your face come election time. Oh, you want to vote for the person that compared our governor, even if he's of the opposite party, to Adolf Hitler? Come on, stop it, please. Just the way when Mr. Trump was in office, everybody tossed around the word fascist, fascist, fascist. Please stop it. 99% of people out there have zero concept of what a true fascist dictator did or what it would be like to live under one, or a true Hitlerian-like dictator. It was fascism and socialism. Remember, the Nazis were the National Socialist Party. But it is just just mind-boggling. Now, again, before we go to the phones here, it's also incumbent on the critics here to go slow on the anti-Semitism here. You know, if somebody is ripping themselves to pieces, let them do it. You don't have to pile on here, but I'm sorry. And if you're going to call here and say you agree with her, I'm going to disagree with you. That's it. Hitler, the comparison of Hitler to Lamont is just dumb. Talking gambling here, and I've tried to keep you folks updated with what's going on. And we get word now over the weekend and more today that there's a soft rollout. In other words, going to allow just a few people to start online gambling coming up tomorrow, and then they hope to roll it out en masse by this coming football weekend. And again, anytime you talk about an increase in gambling or legal gaming in the state, you know, you wonder, is this going to be not good for people who may have a problem with it? Let's check in with a previous guest. We're welcoming back Diana Good. Diana Good is Executive Director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling. Hi, Diana. It's Paul at WICC. Good to hear from you again. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Thanks for coming on short notice. I appreciate it. So I guess tomorrow, Diana, they're going to allow, about 700 or so people to sign on, get their credentials, and I guess then we enter an era that you folks at the Council on Problem Gambling are going to be watching very closely.
Absolutely, yes. Tomorrow, we believe a lot of things are going to change in the state of Connecticut.
So what do you think? Good, bad, ugly, otherwise? What are you thinking here? What are your thoughts?
I'm thinking all of the above. But I do want to start by once again making sure that people understand that the Connecticut Council isn't for or against gambling. We understand that a lot of people gamble for fun. That's how they want to spend their disposable income. We aren't worried about those people. We're worried about the people who gamble and it's no longer fun and they can't stop. And certainly by being able to log on to your phone and gamble, gambling is going to become a lot easier and a lot more people are going to run into trouble. So I think that's what we're going to be seeing over the next couple of months.
What, Diana, are some of the things then that people should watch for? And I'm sure you work with clinicians and people who need help. I mean, obviously, there are always people who say, hey, I'll be fine. I can control this. But then it just gets out of hand.
Exactly. And that's why when we say it's no longer fun, that's really when you need to raise your hand and say that this is a problem. And that goes along with all of addictions, you know, drinking especially. If that's not fun, you need to raise your hand and say you need help. It's the same with gambling. And if you're concerned about a spouse or a kid or a loved one, there's also help available for you as well. There is help for family members free in the state of Connecticut, not just help for problem gamblers.
Diana, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Diana Good is Executive Director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling. More with Diana straight ahead. First, though, check of traffic and weather together right here on WICC. The organization is the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, and the Executive Director is Diana Good. And like a lot of organizations that deal with that sort of stuff, they will be watching Connecticut starting tomorrow with the soft rollout of online gambling. You know, Diana, I have had this told to me by experts I've been interviewing on this, and I'm sure you've heard it too, and the folks you work with there. Sports gambling can be a little tougher to control and insidious because, look, picking a lottery ticket is easy. Just give me a quick pick, whatever. But I had an expert on a couple of weeks ago, Diana, who said sports gambling is tough because people think they know. They have the angle. Oh, I know this team, or this pitcher is horrible in night games, or this team can't run the ball. They can't defend the pass. So that is kind of that little bit of knowledge thing, Diana, that can really hook people.
Absolutely. And poker as well. People think that they have a handle on poker in a different way than a slot machine or the lottery. And that's definitely one of the things about gambling that makes it so addictive is you don't know what's going to happen. With other addictions, you kind of do know what's going to happen. You know, if you drink a fifth of vodka, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But when you gamble, you don't know. You could win. The odds are you are not going to win, but you could. And that's what really keeps people coming back, is that little bit of hope that they could win.
And
the other thing about sports.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up.
That's right. The other thing about sports betting that's also really tough is you can do in-play betting. So you can bet on random things. Is the next play going to be a run or a pass? How long is the national anthem going to be? When are they going to call the next timeout? You can bet on all of those little things throughout the game, and that just snowballs. So a lot of people who are out drinking, doing these bets, you just get deeper and deeper into it before you realize how much money you really have lost.
And I remember, Donna, being, you know, watching TV, growing up, watching games and networks being criticized for, you know, employing guys like Jimmy the Greek and other guys. Hey, they're employing a guy from Vegas. That's a little sleazy. Well, Donna, fast forward to today, and you've got pregame shows and postgame shows in all four major sports, even five now, if you count soccer and the MLS. Openly talking, Donna, about odds and betting lines and money lines. And I'm sitting back the other day watching this going, man, have things changed in two generations?
Absolutely. I mean, ESPN, you know, definitely has lots of shows talking to people about how they can look at the odds and place better bets. It's definitely things have changed.
What should someone do, Donna, if they are seeing someone, let's say it's not them, but it's a loved one, it's a concerned parent, son, daughter, maybe a friend, and they're looking for signs and, you know, they have a friend or a relative talking about how much they lost, how much they won, the odds, what do you think? What are some of the telltale signs that somebody may need help?
Spending too much time focusing on gambling, focusing on the games, things like that is definitely a sign. People also need to keep track of their bank accounts. If you have a joint bank account with your spouse, you need to make sure that you're paying attention to the money coming out of that account, whether it's a credit card or checking or a savings account. Those are really the things that you need to make sure you're paying attention to. And also, people can call our helpline.
Sure.
We have a helpline that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also get on our website and do live chat with someone. So if you think someone in your family has a problem or you have a problem, there are resources available in Connecticut.
And Donna, the website and the phone number, please.
So the phone number is 888-789-7777, and our website is ccpg.org.
All right, Donna Good, Executive Director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling. Donna, thank you. We appreciate it, and we'll be in touch down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Well, folks, there you go. If you think somebody may have a problem, or maybe you have a problem and you don't know who to talk to, 888-789-7777. Got that? 888-789-7777. And look, I in no way when I have these experts on do I in any way, shape, or form try and implicit that, you know, and try and implicate here that, well, if you're throwing $20 on the Red Sox tonight to beat Tampa and advance in the playoffs, you're a degenerate. No, I'm not saying that at all. And we all know, as Donna just said, and whether it's sports gambling or consumption of alcohol or recreational use of marijuana, you know, the vast, vast, vast majority of people are probably okay with it, right? I mean, how many people do you know that buy lottery tickets all the time? Nothing wrong with the state lottery. We love those folks. But you may sit back and say, geez, you're still buying those lottery tickets? But you know what? They do their $5, $10, $15 a week. They can afford it. They're not spending it on booze. They're not spending it on cigarettes. They don't drive a $50,000 or $60,000 car that they can't afford. So this is kind of fun to them. And gambling is kind of fun to people, and it's going to expand a lot in the next couple of weeks. But again, those telltale signs, just, you know, keep an eye out. You know, I had a friend of mine a few years back that, you know, he'd go to Vegas 3 or 4 times a year. He'd go to Atlantic City and, you know, whatever. And then just kind of once on the side. I'm like, dude, you sure you don't get too deep into this? He goes, no, everybody asks me, I'm good. I set aside a certain amount of money. It's my vacation money. All my bills are paid. Everything's cool. I said, all right, well, you know, just looking out for you. But again, like Donna Good said, if you have a friend, once this starts up, it's like, ah, geez, that's all they talk about. Keep an eye on them. All righty. The number once again, 888-789-7777. Once again, 888-789-7777. And you go online and you look for the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, ccpg.org. Joining us right now is a gentleman, former Democratic state legislator. We have him on the show a lot here, state rep, to talk about things. Bridgeport, Italian heritage in the area, very active on that front. And we've discussed the Columbus issue with him, with the statue and with Columbus Day for a few years now. Chris Caruso. Chris, how are you, sir? Good afternoon.
Good. Happy Columbus Day, Paul.
You too, Chris. You know, I was musing earlier on the show, if you didn't hear me, and I'm sure you didn't, because, of course, you have an active life and things to do other than people like me.
Not at all. I like your show, as a matter of fact.
Well, thank you, sir. See, there's one Democrat that likes me. No, just kidding. Chris, do you think that part of the disconnect people have here with Columbus Day, who are kind of on the other side of the fence here and say, well, just rename it, we'll make it a different day. Chris, I think, and I could be wrong, that there are a lot of people that no matter how much they try and intellectualize this whole thing, this does come off to a lot of people as the thumb in the eye to Italians who have, I think, Chris, more considered Columbus Day over the years, maybe less of what Columbus actually did, and more of a celebration of Italian culture and a day to say, hey, this is about us. What do you think of that?
I think you hit it right on the head, Paul. It is a thumb to the eyes of the Italian community. There's no question about it. And so when people speak against Columbus, they're speaking against the Italian community. And I think what troubles me the most is the intellectual dishonesty that's going on. So there are some that blame Columbus for killing Native Indians, the atrocities they accuse Columbus of, but yet they're not willing to look at the atrocities, the killing that indigenous people have done, Native Indians. You know, here alone in Connecticut, you know, when the British were expanding the Connecticut colony as we know it today, the Mohegan Indians massacred, almost annihilated, the entire Pequot Nation of tribe. They killed them in order to work with the British. And yet when we talk about Indigenous People Day, they're not willing to talk about that. You know, so it's let's have purity when it comes to Columbus, but not so much when it comes to Indigenous people. So I think that's where the intellectual dishonesty takes place. And what has the Mohegan and Pequot tribes done? They've worked together for financial gain with their casinos. And yet when you go to the Pequot Nation casino in Connecticut, they have a museum that clearly depicts that the Mohegans almost annihilated their entire tribe. So again, it's the intellectual dishonesty that troubles me the most.
Chris, when did this all start? Was this like 10 or 15 years ago? And look, I know there have been people that have always been against it, but do you have a date or a time or an era or a reference point? Because I'm trying to figure out, when did the anti-Columbus Day push en masse begin? I can't put my finger on it.
No, it's hard to say. I think, you know, the truth of it is the anti-Columbus Day is coupled with anti-Western civilization. There are some that, probably going back to the 50s, the 40s, even earlier than that, that just denounce Western civilization. They accuse Western civilization of all the ills and the shortcomings and the atrocities of the world. And they, for years, have been trying to end Western civilization as we know it. And so Columbus becomes a very convenient target. He's large. He's well regarded by the Italian community, and he's attacked for it. And the truth of it is, the thing that Italians look at is the Italian experience that Columbus represents, which was the sense of the achievement, the contribution that he made to the world. That, you know, through his navigational curiosity, if you will, he was able, through measurements and chartering of waters, he was able to bring together the New World, the continents of the New World, and the continents of Europe. That had never been done before. As a matter of fact, his navigational measurements that he used are still used today by the United States Navy and other naval authorities throughout the world. So I think it's because they accuse him of bringing together these continents that Western civilization was able to flourish. You know, the truth of it is, Columbus never discovered America as we know it, the North American continent. He thought he was in India. Excuse me, and he was actually in Puerto Rico. And just recently, which I found fascinating, is an article where the people of Puerto Rico are celebrating their discovery. And Columbus played the major role of that. And the tallest statue to Columbus is in Puerto Rico. And the government of Puerto Rico asked for the statue. It was going to be placed elsewhere, and other communities didn't want it because of the size of it. And Puerto Rico asked for it.
You know,
and the Dominican Republic has the largest museum to Columbus.
That's interesting. Chris Caruso is the guest. You know, Chris, earlier in the show, I also said, listen, nobody was pure of heart back then. And you could almost pick anybody in history or any culture in history and point out or say what were atrocities. And Chris, listen, if we really want to go down to brass tacks here, millions of people have died, Chris. In the name of religion, be it Christianity, Islam, Judaism. I mean, and yet we have federal holidays and people lauded in those areas. And you say there is kind of a cafeteria picking and choosing here as to what outrages us and what doesn't.
No, and I think you're right, Paul. The fact remains that history is history. You know, we can't invent it. We can't change it. We can't revisit it. It's what it is. It's a recording of facts of what took place. Now, people can sit and take those facts and turn them into what they want to discuss or interpret it their way. But it's history. And the 15th century, you know, exploring of Columbus was not in itself an act solely by Columbus. If we keep it in historical context, it was the Queen of Spain. It was the Spaniards who were looking to expand territory under the name of the Catholic faith. That's what they were doing. You know, when Columbus landed in these different places, he named it not only for the Queen of England, but for the Catholic Church. So you know, to put it all on Columbus and to make Columbus the evil character is really, again, an injustice. And if you judge a 15th century explorer by 21st century litmus test, it's always going to look bad. And the truth is, it's always going to look bad with anyone from those centuries. And you're absolutely right. You know, there's some within faith communities that will argue against Columbus and his atrocities, but yet they'll talk about Judas, who was an apostle of Christ. And yet, you know, he killed Christ, right? And yet and Christ didn't turn around and end Judas's life. He didn't ban him. He's one of the 12 apostles. So the historical significance is that there are atrocities with everyone throughout the centuries, as you've mentioned. That's history. But the real question is, do people really want to learn from history, or they want to try to destroy it or bury it or put it aside? And the fact remains, Paul, no matter what they try, they will never eradicate Christopher Columbus from history. Just will never do it. And I think that's what's driving some people ape. nuts about it, that there's no way that they can get rid of Columbus. And so it just becomes, but every time they couple this argument, well, it's not about the Italian community. We love Italians. We eat their food. We go see their events.
We went to the Sopranos movie, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we go to the San Gennaro feast, and we go to the St. Rock feast. Yeah. So we love Italians. But you know what? When it comes to the person that Italians look up to in the sense of his achievements and his contributions, that's a whole different story. And even in Bridgeport, you get people say, well, pick another Italian. Well, you know what? So what if I said, well, pick another color for the Puerto Rican flag? What would be the comment, right? So to tell a group of people, well, pick someone that's not offensive or that they like, you'll find offense with everyone. And that lies with the Italian community. It doesn't lie with others saying, well, we'll pick someone else. Look at the New Haven, Paul.
Yeah.
They have a committee to choose another name for an Italian, a statue. They can't come to an agreement.
Hey, so, listen. Yeah. The one, yeah. what, listen, it should be Frank Sinatra, but that's just me. Yeah. Listen, Chris, hang on. I want to be right back with you. Chris Caruso is the guest talking about the whole controversy. Continuing, I think good points brought up there by Chris. And we'll talk about where Columbus Day actually came from. Why do we have Columbus Day? You may be interested to find out it was actually in the form of an apology. We'll talk about that coming up. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. All right, a couple more minutes left before we break for the bottom of the hour. We'll hear from Melissa about her show tomorrow morning. Former Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso is with us. We talk about all things Italian heritage with him. He, of course, was right in the middle of the Columbus statue controversy last year or so, and talking today about Columbus Day. Chris, if you can explain where Columbus Day actually came from, because when people hear the story, they kind of go, wow, geez, I never knew that. Where'd it come from?
It came from the President of the United States, Rutherford B. Hayes, in 1892. The story is in 1890, there were 11 men of Sicilian descent, came over from Italy, immigrants, spoke very little English because they were just trying to get acclimated into this country. Characteristic of Sicilian people is that they're very dark skin, kind of olive dark skin, could be mistaken to be black. And so in 1890, the police chief of New Orleans, Louisiana, William Hennessy was his name, he was the chief, he was killed. And the 11 Sicilian men were accused of killing him, partly because they thought that these 11 men were black. They were African-American. So it went to trial, and the jury found all 11 men innocent. Innocent, and found there was no credible evidence to accuse them. Now, keep in mind, these 11 men spoke very little English, so they probably weren't hearing all the proceedings. So as they left the courthouse, the mob outside grabbed them and hung them. All 11 men were hung and killed. And as a result of that, the UN cry from the people of the United States, but also from the government in Italy, was so loud that Rutherford B. Hayes decided to create what's called now the Columbus Day holiday as a way to appease the Italian government and the people who felt outrage over what had happened. So it was actually the president, the government of the United States, that declared Columbus Day. It wasn't the Italian community. We, as Italians back then, didn't say, oh, well, we want to create a holiday. And then in 1909 in Connecticut, in Bridgeport, the Italian community petitioned the General Assembly. And in 1909, the state of Connecticut declared Columbus Day as the official holiday. But the national holiday and the whole thing of Columbus himself, and it's interesting because Rutherford B. Hayes could have picked Frank Pepe from Pepe's in New Haven, but he chose Columbus.
Choose another Italian.
That's right. So that's how this whole thing came. Frankly, out of tragedy, to think 11 men were hung to death over being totally innocent of the crime they were accused of. That's how it all began.
Because of Chris, because of the color of their skin. It's a wild story. Chris, thank you so much. Yeah. I am out of time. Chris Caruso sharing his thoughts about Columbus Day. Chris, thank you. Appreciate that.